All right, we're live. It's the Android Headline Show, episode 85. We are incredibly excited. We've got a special treat for you guys tonight. All the way from California, we've got JBQ with us tonight. I can't tell you how excited I am to have him on the show with us. So we'll be asking, you know, just chatting with him for, I don't know, 30, 45 minutes, however long he wants to hang out. So we're really, really excited. If you're not familiar, JBQ was basically managed and ran the AOSP project for Google and left there a little over a year ago and is now working for Yahoo as a mobile engineer developing Android apps for Yahoo. So if you haven't noticed, you've been living under a rock or something, Yahoo's Android apps have gotten way better in the last 12 months. This is a big reason why. But my name, back up just a little bit. I'm excited here. I'm forgetting my own name. My name's Jeremiah. I'm joined by Nick and Alex from the site. You guys want to say what's up?
What's up, everyone?
Good evening.
So, yeah, we've got some other news and stuff to talk about, too. Some, you know, Nexus 6 pre-orders are up. Our Nexus 6 review is live. Our Note 4 review went up this week, too. But really, I mean, the focus is just on chatting with JBQ. So let's jump into it. Hey, JBQ, thanks for coming on with us tonight, man. Really, really appreciate it. So just for folks kind of, I gave a little bit of your background, but just for some of the folks that may not know about you and kind of how integral you've been to Android, can you give us a little bit of your, you know, kind of your background?
Sure. So the background I'm going to say really to get started, I'm a geek, I'm a nerd, I'm a hacker, I'm a mobile architect at Yahoo. I've been programming since I was 10 years old, so it goes back quite a long time now for me. Funnily, though, I actually studied mathematics and physics in college. I only got into professional computer science and software engineering later. I've been doing mobile for a long, long time now. Mobile for me goes back to 1999, so it's been 15 years. Back then, mobile was big, clunky tablets, £4, 45 minutes of battery life, and barely Wi-Fi because Wi-Fi did not even exist at the time, so it was quite funny. And then I've done feature phones, and then I've done a lot of Android. The funny thing about how I got to Android is that I actually knew a lot of Android engineers from a previous job a long time ago. And we had stayed very, very close friends. And they just kept telling me, you have to come work with us at Google. We cannot tell you what we're working on, but you have to work with us. It's really, really cool. And eventually, they managed to convince me and actually moved to Google. And that's how I ended up in the Android team. The funny thing is that I actually joined Google literally on the day Android was announced to the public, so 7 years and a few days ago. And so I learned about what my job was going to be by reading the press release. While I was a Google employee, but I hadn't talked to anyone on the team yet. And that, for me, that was the start of that long, very, very great story on Android. I started working in Android on the Download Manager, which is that little piece of code that you use to download applications or your email attachments that saves files from the browser, hex that even downloads the system updates that everybody is eagerly waiting for today. So in a way, that's my credit, my fault, if it goes wrong. It's even a public API now, in fact, so since Gingerbread, everybody can use it. I also did quite some work early in the Android days on performance, on stability across the entire system. But mostly, I started to get involved in the open source side of things. Once Android became open source, about a year after I started, I really just started to get involved there, and I ended up, in fact, taking over the entire open source process.
Man, that's fantastic. So what, just because I'm curious, what platforms were you working on? What mobile platforms in 1999? That's fantastic.
So in 1999, I was actually working at a company called B, a small Silicon Valley company. B had done a desktop operating system that was called BOS, and they were actually working on shrinking it to be called BIA. So for all those, what we would call now connected devices, but at the time they were more called internet appliances. They were starting to, those devices that were starting to pop up, B tried to actually work into that direction. That didn't go very far, but it was quite interesting, and it was really the beginning of an industry. Especially, it was the beginning of wireless at home, and that was a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, what are you, what are you working on at Yahoo now? Like, what kind of apps and what projects are you working on?
Well, it's quite interesting because really, I work on essentially every mobile app that Yahoo does. Directly or indirectly, I'm involved in all of them, and if you count all of them, that's actually several dozen apps. So it's a lot of very fun work. More specifically, I'm involved into architecture reviews. I'm involved into working on performance and stability again across the entire range of apps. I'm part of a committee that actually reviews and approves or vetoes every single launch of a mobile app. So I really see everything that's going on all of the apps. I tend to actually focus a lot on the way the different apps work together, different Yahoo apps work together. So the way you sign into one app and hopefully you get signed into all the other apps automatically. We're not there yet, but that's one of the things I work on. The way you navigate from one app to the next, the way you can share content from one app to the next. In fact, the way the settings carry over from one application to the next. All those are some of the aspects that I tend to focus on quite broadly. And more specifically, I've had a deeper touch in some of the Android apps, News Digest.
Yes.
Finance, Fantasy Soccer. Those are some of the apps where I got really involved closely with the team on designing, doing the UI design, the engineering design, and helping the teams, guiding the teams through the process. So that's my role at Yahoo right now. It's a very fun role, and it changes every day.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. If you get your fingers in a dozen or more apps every single day, or some part of them at least, and working on the interoperability. I know the Yahoo News Digest app, our UK editor Tom swears by it. He absolutely loves it. So
every day I'm waiting for 8 a.m., 6 p.m. the latest digest, really getting the news, getting the information I care about, going in depth where I care about it. We love to talk at Yahoo about what we call daily habits, really those applications that you really want to be using every day. And for me, News Digest is not just every day. It's a twice-a-day thing. It's religiously, I read News Digest, everything.
On a schedule, yep. Well, about a year ago, I guess it was a little over a year ago now, September, you left Google and moved to Yahoo. And what's kind of the differences between the environment at Google versus at Yahoo? And I know your role changed, working primarily on the open source Android project versus the mobile apps that you're doing now at Yahoo. But talk to us a little bit about that.
So just like you said, my role is actually different at Yahoo. So some of the comparisons, some of the differences I see are going to be related to the fact that I have a different role. The most visible difference, I would say, and a bit as a joke, Yahoo is a lot more purple than Google, obviously. kind of color. But if you really look at the big picture, actually, in many ways, the companies aren't so different. Let me explain. Both companies, Google and Yahoo, put users first. Both companies solve very hard problems. Both companies really want to get excellent results. They're not happy with good enough. They want excellence. Both companies base their decisions on actual data. Both companies encourage innovation. They actually reward risk-taking. So as an employee coming from Google to Yahoo, a lot of those ways of thinking, a lot of those ways, that basic philosophy of what the companies are trying to build is actually very familiar. It's the philosophy of Silicon Valley, if you think about it. All the companies in Silicon Valley are trying to do that. That being said, I think there's one big difference that I've noticed at Yahoo that's been a very positive change for me coming from Google. I'm finding Yahoo to be a lot more collaborative, a lot more transparent, a lot less siloed between groups and between functions. I get to work with people who actually do very deep back-end, server-side. I get to work with UI designers across the entire company. I get to work with product managers of products that you may not have heard of because they're very deep. And I really have that collaboration all around the company. And I see some openness and transparency all around the company. And it's very easy to actually know what's going on, to get involved. And that is something that I really, really enjoy at Yahoo.
And it's interesting that you say that, because we've heard that before about Google, is that things are very siloed. teams work on their project, and there's not a lot of, or not as much, of the teams working together. So I'm sure that's helpful, with what you're doing at Yahoo.
And
so
some of that is probably also visible in the plain numbers. Yahoo's got about 12,000 employees, a bit more than 12,000 employees. Google's got 52,000. It's much easier to actually know what's going on when you've got 12,000 employees than when you've got 52. And I'm sure that people who've been at Google probably at this point 8 or 9 years remember when Google was about that size, and they might be able to say back then Google was more open and more collaborative. So it might just be a growing pain for Google as it's been becoming bigger and bigger.
Right, right. And that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. Coming out of kind of handling the open source side of Android at Google, moving into Yahoo, where do you see, where do you think Yahoo is kind of leading the way on the Android platform?
Well, I think the best example for that is AV8. But what's interesting is that I'm not going to say that AV8 leads the way for Android. I think AV8 leads the way for mobile. If you think about the way you've been launching applications on an Android phone or on an iPhone, or on Windows Mobile, or on Symbian, or on BlackBerry, it's always been a grid of icons. We've been dealing with grids of icons for 10 years, and even on your feature phones, you'd have a 3x3 grid of icons that would match the numbers on your keypad. So it's been 15 years that everything we've done to actually get from the start screen, from the home screen of a phone to an application, has been a grid of icons. And AV8 is actually breaking that. So it's innovation on top of Android, and obviously Android giving us the flexibility to do our own launcher helps us do that. But it's really innovation in the entire world of mobile. We're really just rethinking the way you actually get to your applications in all of mobile. So it's very interesting. AV8 is an excellent launcher. You use it for a few days, and then you realize, you ask yourself, how could I ever use anything else? Why didn't we have that earlier? So that already makes it a great launcher. But really, AV8 goes deeper than that. Everybody likes to talk about contextual awareness. And AV8, if you look at the surface, really tries to do that. It doesn't show you the same applications. If you're on the road, if you're at home, if you're at work, if you're shopping, if you're at a restaurant, it actually adapts to those things. But that kind of contextual awareness, if you look at it in a simple way, it's really just if this, then that. That's something that can vary, that many people know how to do. AV8 really, really wants to go deeper than that. AV8 does what we call at Yahoo anticipatory computing. We want to actually not just have reactions based on hard-coded rules, but really understand what you're going to care about at a point in time, which content is going to be important to you, which application is going to be important to you, and to really do it in a way that adapts a lot more to the way you're behaving. So that's where I think really Yahoo is leading the way for Android, and Android being very open gives us the ability to do that, but really for all of mobile if you look at the very big picture.
I'm glad you mentioned
it. That's one example.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned it, AV8. I love it. I swear by it. When Yahoo bought the company, I was a little hesitant to see kind of what was going to happen, but I feel like Yahoo's handled that transition really well, and the app has just continued to get better. But I love it. Absolutely love it. I've got it
That's
on
great.
All my phones. It's, that AV8 and SwiftKey are the two things that just the, because it is intuitive, because it is contextual, the app groupings, being able to group into different categories. I used to do that myself, but it would take me hours. AV8 just does it, So, hey, Lauren. So, yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, just because I love the app. And that makes a lot of sense, where Yahoo's looking to move forward with the way we use our phones and looking at mobile more as a platform, not just at Android, but at mobile as a whole.
Right. So I think AV8 is one of those examples where we're really pushing the envelope in that direction. But there are other areas where you can really see Yahoo just pushing on top of Android, pushing the limits of what's really, really great. We've talked about News Digest a little bit. We can also talk about Yahoo Weather. I think those show that you can get a fantastic user experience if you combine great content, great design, great technology. Those are some of the things that Yahoo is really, really good at. And you don't want to underestimate the importance of just pure technology. If you use the Flickr application as an example, the performance is really, really amazing. We have spent hours, weeks, in fact, months optimizing that application because that's what you really need to be in order to be able to see all those photos, to really scroll through them, zoom on them, download them quickly. You have to have that kind of technology investments. You cannot just take it easy and expect that you're going to get a Flickr-like experience without pushing the envelope a little bit.
Right, yeah. Well, and you mentioned not just Android, but iOS and Windows Phone. What are some of the kind of the biggest advantages that you see of developing for Android versus other platforms?
Well, the first one that's fairly obvious, I think, is the openness. We have access to the source code. It's very easy and it's very quick to actually public on Google Plus, on the Google Play. There are very few restrictions on what you can actually do with the platform. We have APIs that allow us to actually do AV8, and that requires quite some deep integration into the phone. We're allowed to actually push the envelope, look at some of the darker corners. There's really a lot of openness there that really helps us as an innovative company push the boundaries of what's possible. Another very obvious advantage, you've got a billion active users on the platform. That's a lot of people who are going to be using your apps. So it's one platform that will let you run on phones, laptops, soon watches, tablets. We've had tablets for a long time. TVs, heck, even cars are coming. So all around the world, all the possible screens, already a billion users, that's a great platform you want to be developing for. And as an engineer, there's one aspect of Android that I didn't know quite about until I saw the difficulties of working on the other platforms. Android, surprisingly, makes it possible to write very stable applications. We are finding at Yahoo that we can get much, much better crash rates on Android than on any other platform we're targeting. The quality of the development tools, the quality of the debugging tools, the quality of the platform itself, the choice of language really allows to actually build very solid code with a lot fewer bugs. Android is a very interesting platform, though, because it's amazingly rich. Like I said, it's pretty much wide open for everything. That's a challenge in a way as well. It allows us to innovate, but it also forces us to be very careful about what we want to be innovating at, because if we look at Lollipop, 5,000 new APIs, we could be spending months of work just trying to use all those APIs and try to understand really how to use them, and we would just lose focus here of what's really important. So we've got to be careful with Android to actually focus on what's really going to make an impact for the users and not just playing with new toys that make engineers happy.
Which is a real risk.
And on the other side, Android's got some challenges. We can talk about challenges as well. I'm not going to say everything is nice and rose because it's more greenish, but
right.
Some of the challenges we're seeing with Android is a small incompatibilities between some devices. Once you start to talk very close to the hardware, we're finding, let's say, for cameras or for sensors, that the behaviors aren't always very consistent between devices. So that's a little bit of a challenge. We're also finding that everybody understands Android well when it comes to phones, but once you start to look at tablets and then wearables and then TVs, it's a little bit of a mystery. Everybody is struggling to actually interpret those new ecosystems with their own view, and the data, the analysis that everybody is giving aren't all consistent. So there is some difficulty for everyone to understand exactly what's going on there. And then there's a big challenge for us for Android, but I think everybody is like that. Hiring engineers and hiring designers for Android is actually hard. And that means that we have to be very careful. Everybody's got to be very careful about being focused on what's going to make the biggest impact, the biggest difference. We have tons of ideas of things that we would like to explore, areas where we'd like to innovate, that we have to actually be careful about so that we continue shipping, doing high quality work, and actually making a difference for users. Because it's great to do a little bit of research and to actually reach a conclusion of what may or may not be possible, but that doesn't make a difference for users. What matters for you is what actually ships. So that's one of the areas I think that's a little bit of a challenge. It's not a technical challenge, it's just an ecosystem challenge. It's just finding the right people to actually really build those fantastic experiences.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say, you know, that Android is, you're able to build more stable apps. That's a big comparison that we hear on a daily basis, is just the quality of apps, specifically between Android and iOS. And Android obviously has fantastic apps, and that's grown and gotten a lot better. But it puts a smile on my face to hear you say, you know, as a developer that's building apps for Android, hey, Android's got the best, the most stable platform that we work with. That's really cool. So let's switch gears a little bit, because I know you worked on the Android open source project. Where did you, you know, how did you kind of find your love for open source?
Oh, that's a great question. The love for open source for me did not come, I would say, not directly as a love for open source. I love challenges. That's one thing that is really a constant for me, from job to job, from project to project. I really love to work on a good challenge. And before working at Google, I already had a background in version control, in dealing with large code bases, in dealing with build systems. So as such, Android was a fantastic challenge. Even the original code drop was about 100 million lines of code if you really look at everything that was in there. So working with a code base of that size was very interesting. Working then with a code base of that size in the open and the open source side of the world also came from a love of working with other developers. It's always been great. We were talking earlier about the way many years ago I used to work at B, where we were doing an operating system. After that, I actually worked on a mobile browser, where obviously we also had a lot of mobile developers, web developers using our technologies, using our tools. So it's been quite a constant in my career to work with other developers. And when you got an opportunity to actually work on Android and to work with the entire open source community, that's just about the best opportunity you might have to work with other developers. So I love doing that.
So it's about the community.
There was something about the community, about the human aspect. I try to keep in mind all the time that everything is about humans in the end. Even when as a user you think about a big company that's doing something you don't like, in the end it's a human making a mistake, a human making a decision, a human trying to help you as well. So it's just humans working together. You know, there are 7 billion of us on this planet. We're just trying to actually make life easy for one another.
Yeah, trying to figure it out.
But it's been really funny just working on Android, working on the open side. I had never really done open source before, so I had to learn along the way as I went. It was fun, and I had to learn the tools, and I had to learn the community, and I had to learn the business, and a lot of that. And then I applied some technical things as well. It's pretty funny, as an example, in the early days, we didn't have at Google many of the tools that now exist. So all the contributions that ended up being made from the early days of Android all the way to Eclair, I actually merged all of those contributions by hand, one by one, into Google's internal.
Oh, my gosh.
So I would look every morning at all the contributions that had been accepted by the Android team in general, that were really the maintainers of the code base, and that were on the open source side of the world, and I would just merge them into the Google code base one at a time. So I did a lot of that for a long time, and eventually we got tools. So tools did most of the work eventually, but in the beginning that was all manual. Similarly, something that was very important for me, and that is really the love of working with other developers. It was very important for me. It's always been very important for me to try to get Android as a code base, not just to be released under an open source license, because if you look at open source, the open source side, the definition, that's almost a lawyer's view of a community. To me, what was important was to actually have a product of my own, in a way, something that's a code base that people could use, but that would be useful for people. So being able to run the Android open source project on actual hardware was an important goal for me. In the very early days, all of that support was already was fairly rough, and I built up on it, and I built up more on it. As an example, between Eclair and Froyo, I did all the work to actually separate the hardware support for Nexus One and at the time for the MyTouch 3G between what could be released as open source and what could not, and that had to be handled as binaries. Until then, there was no such separation, but it was important for me to release as much of that code as possible as open source, and then to support it, starting with Gingerbread, with the actual binaries that got distributed so that the code could be run. So that's the that's open source, I would say, important in terms of the distribution, the legal framework that makes it very that makes open source very useful for large companies. But there's, in a way, the philosophy of free software as well, the right, but also the practical ability to look at the source code and to modify it and to distribute it, because there's the legal right, the open source license guarantees that you have that legal right. But if it's impractical, then what's the legal right good for in a community? So I really worked a lot to make that legal right a practical reality for the community.
Yeah, you mentioned that recently on Google Plus with the Nexus 9, in the how that was more in line with the spirit of open source. You know, those closed source binaries were on their own partition. And so that was easier.
And yeah, that's exactly right. Now it's going to be possible to actually distribute versions of Android for Nexus 9 in a way that does not force the that does not create the constraints of those binaries, because the binaries are actually kept separate. So it's really just a bit more of the philosophy of open source, the philosophy of free software that's going to become more practical.
Yep. And I think a lot of people, a lot of Android users, confuse Android with Google's apps and services. And there's a lot of, well, Google says it's open, so it must be open. Well, that's, you know, Google's apps are proprietary. They're closed source. You know, they're apps. They're not going to let us have the code for those. What are some of those key differences, do you think, between the Android OS itself and, you know, what Google brings to the table?
So I'm going to be speaking a little bit like a mobile architect, like a software architect, just thinking in terms of boxes and layers. So really, and at a very high level, there's one layer. The first layer is Android, the operating system itself. I've worked on other operating systems before. It's an OS that works on its own. It runs, it's got a framework, it launches applications, it offers all the capabilities to actually run applications. It offers all the hardware abstraction for the cameras, the sensors, all of that. So that's really Android, the operating system. And once it's released as open source, it's entirely independent from Google. In fact, that's been a design goal, was to actually, there's that goal to keep a separation between Android, the operating system, and the Google world, so that the operating system as a product is actually a viable product independently from Google. Then there's a second layer on top of that, and this is a layer that's important for application developers. Google offers tons of cloud services. Mm-hmm. They offer Google Maps and Google Cloud Messaging, which is that push service. They offer Google Drive for storage. There's the whole Google Play Games to actually deal with all the gaming aspects. They have location APIs. And even if you think in terms of services for developers, they have Google Play Store. Just the ability to upload a binary and have it available to the entire world and have billing taken care of. Those are all those services, all those APIs that are tied to Google's cloud. If you look at every single one of them, they're actually related to using Google servers. And those are extra APIs that Google makes available for people to use their cloud, just like other cloud providers also provide libraries to actually talk to their cloud. There are libraries to actually talk to AWS from Android, if you actually prefer to work with AWS. So Google, on top of Android and also on top of other platforms, there are, as an example, Games APIs for iOS. Google mm-hmm. provides APIs to access their cloud. And then there's the third layer, which at this point is not at all an application layer not an OS layer anymore. It's really the application layer. Google is an incredible developer of actual applications for Android.
Think of Gmail, Google Earth, Google Plus, Hangouts, Google Keep, YouTube, and there are a lot more than that. Google builds great applications, and even if you go back very far, Google's goal is to actually build applications. They don't care actually about platforms. They care about building the best possible applications. Building Android was a way to make it possible to build those applications that they wanted to build, those applications that they had in mind. But Google's end goal is to actually have ecosystems of applications and to have openness so that they can build the applications that they want and anybody else can actually build applications that are just as good as Google's own applications. So that's the way I see the separation. There's a layer that is Android, the operating system on its own, very independent from Google. It's a very credible operating system on its own. It's what Amazon uses as an example to build the Kindle Fires.
Mm-hmm.
An extra layer on top of that, specifically to access Google's cloud services and Google's cloud APIs for developers, and then Google applications that are really just standalone applications. That's my view of those layers, and I hope that's what everybody wants to hear.
Well, it makes sense, and it's helpful, I think, to have someone who's worked closely with Android, the operating system, and with Google. It's helpful to get your perspective on it. Definitely appreciate that. Let's switch gears again a little bit, just to some more recent news. Android 5.0 Lollipop is out. The code's been pushed to AOSP. We're seeing it roll out to devices. The Moto X and the Moto G are getting it already, and a ton more devices will have it before the end of the year. What are you excited about with Lollipop?
Well, I think the first thing I'm excited about is that it's getting released so quickly.
Yes.
It was, I think, 2 years ago when Google actually explained at Google I/O how they wanted to make sure that it was possible for silicon partners and for device manufacturers to release new versions so quickly. And just like everything in the Android world, it took 2-3 releases to actually get it right. But when we're seeing just 9 days after the code drop, we're already seeing devices getting updates. And those are not just SOC tests. Those are consumer-level updates. I think Google's been very successful on that. So that's the first thing I'm really excited about, is seeing that those promises and those goals that Google set for themselves and working with the rest of the ecosystem are really paying for users now, because we're getting Lollipop right now, way before Christmas. Now, if I look at really the operating system and what we can do as developers, there are just too many things to be excited about. I can't list them all. Material design, obviously, is the most visible one of all. We talked a lot about that at Google. Google's been showing a lot about that. They've been updating their own applications already. It's going to be great. Material design is really, I think, a fantastic starting point for all app developers. And instead of being able to use, I would say, the old Google guidelines as, okay, something that they kind of think is right, but we can't really do anything in that framework, material design is really something that everybody's going to be able to build on top of. Visually, there are lots of opportunities for customizations, so it's going to be very possible to be material design, but also to actually be customized. If you go back even to Jelly Bean, if you wanted to have your own color, and you know Yahoo is a very purple company, you still had to deal with the fact that all the icons in the status bar were actually light blue, so you didn't even have control over that. We saw changes for that in KitKat, but Material is just pushing that much, much further. It's really going to make a lot of things really good. Even more important, I think, material design, the interactions with material are really important. The fact that there is that fluid, continuous motion of everything you touch, everything you do, everything you drag on the screen is really going to be great for users, because suddenly there's a physicality to everything you do and there's a physical response to everything you touch on the screen. And that's going to let users understand what happens. Instead of having a crossfade or instead of having a hard cut, there are going to be all the screens that just reorganize themselves based on what you've just done. But because it's continuous and because it starts from where you touched, it's going to be a lot easier to understand. So that's, to me, that's what's really exciting about Material as a user. now as an engineer, we can start to go deeper. All those changes in Lollipop that will actually reduce or even eliminate all the small hiccups we tend to see in the apps. Mm-hmm. There's art. We've talked a lot about art, but there's another thing that's called a render thread that suddenly is going to be able to decouple the way the application interacts with the rest of the system and the way the interaction interacts with the screen. And we're going to have super, super, super smooth scrolling on Android at last.
Yes.
So very, very happy about that. Other things that I think are very important, there is that new category of APIs are called job scheduler. And they're going to optimize battery usage and network usage, especially on devices that have many apps. That's the key for all these applications to collaborate on using the network and using the battery better. And that's just going to make life much better for all the users. One little thing that was announced more recently, the fact that WebView can now be updated independently from the system is a big deal. Mm. Because WebView, big HTML render, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, that's an ecosystem itself that moves quickly. That's an ecosystem itself that could have security problems as well, and it has had security problems in the past. Google does a fantastic job at fixing them, but if they can't deploy the fixes, it's not so useful. So now they'll be able to actually deploy that, and that's going to make all of Android even more secure, especially for things that use WebView. So that's very exciting for me. And we use WebView at Yahoo here and there, so that's good news for us.
Yeah, and from a security standpoint, you're right. That's good news for users. So is there anything you maybe would have done or like to have seen done differently with Lollipop?
No, generally speaking, you know, we're very happy. Yahoo's very happy with all the possibilities that already exist with Android. It's an incredibly powerful, incredibly open platform. So we're just excited about what Google's been doing, what Google's been working on. It's going to be a great starting point for Yahoo to build even better apps. So we're very happy about it.
Good, good. That's good to hear as well. What about Android Wear? Kind of what are your thoughts on that move? And I asked that specifically because, you know, we've seen Google Glass. You know, we didn't see consumers, you know, kind of gravitate towards it in a big way. But Android Wear and just smartwatches and that arena of wearables seems a little more palatable to people.
Yeah. I'm very excited about what's possible here. I actually have a G Watch from LG that I've had since Google I/O, and I had not been wearing a new watch for probably close to 10 years now, and I'm wearing a watch every day. I'm finding that it's very interesting because the way I actually use the watch is very different from the way I use the phone. For me, it's purely a reactive interaction. The watch tells me there's something important for me, and I look at it and I actually make a decision about that without having to pull the phone out of my pocket. So it's an interaction that takes a quick glance, a fraction of a second. It's very exciting for Yahoo. We were talking about Aviate. We're talking about anticipating the user's needs. The key to really the success of applications running for Android Wear is about having exactly the notifications and a bit of information that the user wants to have, but no more than that.
Yeah.
And on the phone, because there's already a certain effort to take the phone out and to unlock it and to look at the notifications and then to scroll through them, there's a certain user tolerance about how much noise you can have in notifications. On the watch, there's probably a lot less such tolerance. So it's really, really good, and we're very happy at Yahoo to see that, because that's really the kind of problems that we love solving and that we've been solving quite well already with Aviate. But that's going to be a challenge for the whole ecosystem, I think. I don't think users want a watch that vibrates every 30 seconds. We don't think users want a watch that has 100 notifications to go through. That's too much. So showing everything so that you don't miss everything, but not showing more than that is the great challenge of Wear. For me, what's been even more interesting is that so far I was thinking of the world of portable computing in terms of a phone and a tablet. And now that I'm seeing Android Wear, I'm rethinking that in terms of having a watch and a phablet.
Yeah.
now that the watch is the small screen, the phone itself can grow bigger. So we've been thinking of phones becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. At the same time, we've been seeing tablets actually become smaller and smaller and smaller. Everybody started with tablets at 10-inch, and then it became 9, and then we got 7, and now Amazon just had a 6-inch tablet. So phones and tablets are converging into that medium-sized form factor. And then the watch is that little thing that you carry with you all the time, and you can keep the phablet in that case in a back pocket, in a purse, in a backpack, something like that. So to me, that's the evolution. That's the possibility of Android Wear. It's the possibility for phones to become bigger.
And it completely changes that dynamic. You're completely right. We've had similar discussions amongst ourselves here, you know, on the site. So I'm glad to hear you say that. It kind of confirms my thoughts on, you know, phones getting bigger. Because at first, you know, you start stepping into a 5-inch, 5.5-inch, then 6-inch phone, people are going, oh, that's too big, that's too big. Well, it's not if you're not having to pull it out every single time you get a notification.
That's exactly right.
So that's exciting. That's exciting. I'm also in the same boat as you. I didn't wear a watch for years and years until I got a G watch. So, and now I feel naked without it. So
it's amazing how much of this is so similar. Like with the watch thing, the phablet thing, all that stuff. I feel completely the same way.
Yep, and the market's reflecting that too. You know, tablets are not just getting smaller. We're seeing tablet sales decline as phones get bigger. So they're obviously being replaced. But wear and wearables in general kind of fill that extra space and make it a little more convenient. I found that I've spent a good amount of time kind of setting things up in the Android Wear app and muting certain applications so that I'm not overrun with notifications. So I'm glad that's a focus for you guys at Yahoo to kind of, you know, make sure we get that right.
Yeah, we really have to find that right balance of, like I said, having all the information you need, but not much more than that.
Yep. Well, what you know, what new projects are you working on at Yahoo? I know you said you've got your fingers in a lot of pies. what awesome new stuff are you working on?
That's a tough question, you know. Secret project. So obviously I cannot talk about what's been released. But if you look at what we've been doing recently, we have actually one new app every 2 months. You know, we've had this year alone, Aviate, Yahoo Screen, News Digest. We've redone Finance entirely. We've done Fantasy Soccer. And it's only been 10 months since the beginning of the year. So that gives you an idea of how quickly we've been working and how quickly we're able to actually create new, really good products. But also, if you think about it, if you look at the evolution of Yahoo in the last year, in the last 2 years, we spent a lot of effort building a solid base. Now we think we actually have that solid base. We have a set of applications that actually really rich, really solid, really useful, really beautiful in general. There's still a few dark corners. But we think we got there and that we can actually move to the next step of making the applications even more useful, even more anticipatory, even more collaborative. So that's the general direction that we have in mind. My personal goal, and that's not so much of a secret, I want every single one of Yahoo's applications to be entirely awesome so that everybody says, that's a must-have application, I have to have it on all my devices, I have to use it every single day. There's still a lot of work to do, but News Digest is one of those examples. It's just, I can't live without it. And once you get used to it, you really can't live without it. It keeps you informed, and it just takes a few minutes of your time every day, and that's it. You're in the know. You know what's going on in the world. You have the news. So that's what I'm thinking of, is really having news apps that everybody wants to use every day.
And it shows, because like I said, over the last year or so, the Yahoo's apps have gotten just way, way better.
Thank you.
Even with Yahoo, you know, with the weather app, and you mentioned Flickr as well, just being really beautiful and being really fast and responsive. I play a lot of fantasy football, and the Yahoo Fantasy Football app is by far the easiest to navigate between just between the ESPN app, the NFL.com app, and Yahoo's fantasy app. Just makes it makes sense in the way that I navigate through. And, you know, when I'm looking for players off the waiver wire or whatever, it flows well and it makes sense. So
we spend a lot of time thinking about what are the use cases that are very important for users, and we've talked a lot about what we call those daily habits. But even when you do the design of an application, you have to think about the daily habits. What are the features of an application that the user is really going to use every day? Which are the features that the user is going to use less often? Do we really need to customize a settings screen, which in a perfect world the users might see once and that's it? No, we don't. That the settings screen is not a daily habit. But seeing your sports results, composing your teams, heck, just, you know, giving your buddies a hard time, that is a daily habit.
Yep. Well, on a, you know, kind of a personal basis, what devices are you using? I know you mentioned you've got the G-Watch now.
Lots of devices. I've got a bad habit of actually buying devices and hoarding devices, so that's going to be a long list. But my primary phone is today a Moto G, the very first version before LTE. So that's always in my pocket. I also carry a big phablet. I have a Sony Z Ultra, the Google Play Edition, so that's 6.4 inches of pure awesomeness. I've got the G-Watch that is actually paired to it. When I need to stay in touch with work, I actually have an iPhone, because that way I actually get to see what's happening in that ecosystem as well. I've got a few tablets. I actually have an Android laptop, a Chromebook. At work, I have a MacBook Pro and a couple of games consoles as well. So devices, gadgets, just more than I can count. And those are the ones I could remember. Like those are the ones I really use all the time. I have a few more to play around, but those are more experimental stuff.
I think it says a lot for Motorola and how far they've come just in the last couple of years that you use the first generation Moto G as a daily driver.
It's a fantastic phone. It's actually fast. It's very intuitive. AV8 runs fantastic on it, so I really love that. And it's got a great battery life, so what else would I want?
Yep. Well, Alex, Nick, you guys have any other questions? Any kind of burning things that you wanted to ask JBQ?
I don't have any, but Nick probably has some.
What you got, Nick?
I don't know. I mean, I think the ones that I submitted were the only thing that I could think of. I'm going to try AV8 now that you talked about it, because I've been really big on Flickr and the Yahoo Weather app for a long time now. So,
yes, the weather app.
Yeah, there's some things that I'm like, I don't know if I really want to change it. The launcher is one of those things. So it'll be hard, but I'll give it a shot.
It takes a bit of time. Give yourself an hour to install it and actually start to sort your applications into the right categories. It does a great job to start with, and it gives you a good starting point, but you can refine a bit beyond that. And then use it for a few days, and then you see you just can't go back, because it really helps you find which applications you need at which point in time.
Yeah, and I like that functionality. The only thing I got to ask, is it possible to get live wallpaper working on there?
We've been thinking about it a fair amount.
Because that's all I use.
Yeah. So I can talk to the technical aspect of live wallpapers. If you look at AV8, if you look at a lot of the Yahoo applications, we actually love to blur things around, mm-hmm. to take a background image, and then in some circumstances to actually make a big blur on top of that.
Yep.
And it turns out it's not actually possible to blur a live wallpaper. So we're still looking for the right technical solutions here. We're not giving up. We haven't found a solution quite yet.
Sounds good.
Yeah, Nick swears by his live wallpapers, so.
In camera apps.
Yes, in camera apps.
Yeah, well, AV has a nice little camera app section, so I was already happy for that.
Yeah. Keep them all grouped in one place, man. And that's what if you're looking for, like, just all-out customization, AV8 may not be your go-to. I liked it because of its utility. because, you know, it kind of took that piece out of my brain when I'm driving in the car or when I'm at home or when I'm at work. I just don't have to think about it. Those apps kind of pop up, and it does it well. So, it, again, it just depends on what you're looking for out of your launcher. But, well, cool. That's the questions that I had for you. JBQ, again, thank you so much. We really do appreciate your time and taking time out to come and talk to us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. That was a lot of fun. And I'll be looking forward to reading a lot more of what you have to say about everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you are more than welcome to hang out if you want to. If you need to drop off, that's fine too. Again, we do want to respect your time. We're going to switch gears a little bit, just talk about some of the news stuff that happened this week. What was the biggest thing? I think it was the Nexus 6 today. That is, pre-orders are available from AT&T. T-Mobile's have been delayed a week, but the Nexus 6 is here. Our review is up on the site. Alex, you wrote that review. You want to talk about that a little bit? Talk about what you like and maybe what you don't about the Nexus 6?
I'm not sure if I can say anything that I don't like about it. I'm still not good. Too happy with the size, though, but is getting used to it. I mean, it's still a pretty big phone. Only thing I don't like is the back. Like, it picks up fingerprints really nice, or really well, I guess is the term for it.
Easily.
On the white one. Yeah. It picks it up so easily. When I'm trying to take pictures of it for the site, they just show up. Lollipop it's amazing, because I never used it on like the Nexus 5 or the 7, you know, with the dev previews, because I didn't have either one of those devices. But Lollipop is nice and smooth. People have been talking about the battery bug. I haven't had any issues with battery. I mean, it gets me through a full day. Even today, when I was out and on LTE most of the day, I still have 16% left, which is 3 hours. I mean, the screen is, I'm not sure if it's better than the Note 4. I think the Note 4 might be a little bit better, but it's probably because of the PPI. It's a little bit lower on the Note 4, or a little bit higher, I mean, because the screen is smaller. Camera's pretty good compared to, like, you know, past Nexus devices. I think the Dre Turbo might be a better camera, though, but it is a 21 megapixel versus a 13. Not sure what else I could say that's not in the review, so just go read that.
Yeah, and I know, you know, you took some time and really dove into that.
Yeah, it's probably the longest review I've written all year, but that's usually the case with the Nexus.
Yeah, good. And that falls in line with what I've, the other stuff that I've heard about the Nexus 6 so far, that it's a little bit too big, but the Lollipop is absolutely amazing. And we have a nice device, finally, with decent battery life and a good camera, which has been a long time coming.
Yeah. And with the battery life, I've had the G-Watch R paired to it for, what, the last 2 weeks now, I think. So if you don't have a smartwatch, it probably lasts a bit longer.
The real question is, have you tried to dunk it and see if it actually is waterproof yet?
I'm not sure, because there's no flap on the micro USB.
Has Motorola taken that off their site yet? I should look.
Wasn't it in one of the one of those new Android or the Google commercials? The little kid runs by and drops it in the fish tank.
He like launched it into the fish tank with some little trebuchet or something. It was ridiculous.
I know the Moto X is like water repellent, so like if you're in the rain or whatever and you're using your phone, you don't have to worry about anything. I'm guessing that's what they meant with the Moto or the Nexus 6 as well. I haven't tried to put it in the sink full of water or anything though.
Yeah, it's same thing, it just says water resistant. Yes. Okay. Sure.
I saw before it was like IP67. I'm not quite sure though.
You should test it. Because I don't have to pay for it if it gets ruined.
That's right.
Cool. Well, yeah, definitely go check out that Nexus 6 review. Like we said, that's available for pre-order at AT&T. Should be available for pre-order at Sprint pretty soon, too.
I'm not T-Mobile. Sure if they're doing pre-order. I think they're just doing straight up selling the thing.
Okay. AT&T T-Mobile delayed it until next on week. 18th. On the 18th?
The AT&T is shipping on the 18th. They're pre-orders.
Okay.
At least that's T-Mobile, what
they're saying. T-Mobile delayed it until the 19th next week. They've got it in stores because I've got a buddy who works at T-Mobile that was snapping pictures of the Nexus 6. So they have them in stores. I don't know whether the one that he had was the store demo or if it was actually device stock to sell, but they obviously don't have enough to make it available yet because they delayed it for a week. Today being Wednesday, Google put some more Nexus 6s up for sale, and they sold out like that again.
Before we could even publish our post.
Yep. They were already gone. So that'll be like that for a few more weeks, maybe through the end of the year. Just supply will be tight because Google's partnered with all the U.S. carriers now for those.
Yeah, and we still don't have any word on Verizon and U.S. Cellular selling them yet. They're supposed to be selling them, but we don't have no win.
Yeah, no hard, fast dates on those yet. Android 5.0 Lollipop is also rolling out to today to the Moto X and the Moto G.
And all the Nexus except for the 4.
Yes, so the 5, the Nexus 7, 2012 and 2013.
Not the LTE and HSPA Plus, though. At least last time I checked it, was it for those two?
Just the Wi-Fi versions?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Nexus 10.
Yep, the 9 and the 10. We're getting updated. What else? The Sony is testing it. I don't remember if they posted it on their website or Google Plus or where they posted it. Twitter, maybe. That they are testing it on the Z1, the Z2, and the Z3. So that'll be out on those devices soon.
They're also working on AOSP builds for those as well.
Yes.
They did with KitKat and Jelly Bean as well, maybe.
Yeah, they did. And Sony's been really great about that, making the source code available and getting updates out really quickly. We've seen, I know Nick flashed it. I haven't flashed it yet. Unofficial CM12 builds for the OnePlus One. So how's that running for you, Nick? I know you said Bluetooth wasn't working, but everything else working okay?
Bluetooth is the only thing that really doesn't work right. My other friend that has a OnePlus One just sent me a picture of him getting the soft buttons working, so... That was another thing that wasn't, it was just using the hardware capacitive buttons earlier.
Oh, boo. So,
yeah, but he got the soft buttons working somehow, I don't know. I'll ask him tomorrow, whatever. But that is a possibility, apparently. And then hopefully, I don't know if it's a kernel thing or what it is with the Bluetooth, but I tried one of the other Lollipop kernels and still no dice. So, soon enough. It's super ultra alpha state right now.
Yep. It's the first build that we've seen.
I don't know. It's a pretty darn good alpha, because literally, other than Bluetooth, I don't have a single problem with it.
Fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait to get my hands on it. I use Bluetooth too much in the car.
I use Bluetooth too much all day.
Yeah. Well, and the watch, too. If you don't have Bluetooth, your watch isn't going to pair with it. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I went back to KitKat for the time being.
Yep. But it won't be, but maybe a week, and they'll have that fixed.
Yeah, if even that.
Probably be tomorrow.
Hey, that's fine with me.
Yep, I hope so. What else? Any other devices that we've heard about? I know, you hear from manufacturers, hey, we saw it running on the Galaxy S5.
LG G3 is rolling out this week in Poland. Yep. Lollipop.
There's also a port for the Galaxy Nexus if you feel like trying it.
Yes, I still have my Galaxy Nexus. I'm going to go flash that.
I'm surprised there isn't one for the Nexus One yet. Because that always happens.
That'll be tomorrow.
And that was it, the HTC HD2 or whatever?
The HD2.
Ran. Yeah.
I'll give you $100 if you can get Lollipop running on the HD2. I shouldn't say that because I'm sure it's already been done and now I owe somebody $100.
He probably has it already.
Yep. HD2 will never die. What else this week? John got our Note 4 review up. So this is the first, I think you got to hand off a flagship review, Alex. It's pretty nice to give you a little bit of a break.
I also have a Note 4 from Verizon here. It's the white one. I haven't really been using it because I've been using the Nexus 6 mostly, but I really like the hardware on it compared to like the Note 3 last year and even to the S5 this year. Because it's basically like the Note 3 and the Galaxy Alpha merged together. Because you got the aluminum sides, which is it's really white, so it's hard to see, but aluminum sides, and then you got the faux leather without the stitching, which I think looks a lot better. And then the front just looks like, you know, every other Samsung device we've seen for a while.
Well, and you said that earlier, too, that the hardware was really nice.
Yeah, it feels
the software is nice still TouchWiz.
But it feels tiny compared to the Nexus 6. And it's the same size.
That's saying something, man.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think that is? Is that just the way it feels in your hand? The way the Nexus 6 is shaped?
Because like if you put them like side by side, they're about the same height and about the same width almost. So I'm not really sure why, but it does feel a whole lot smaller.
Is the Nexus 6 heavier?
Not by much.
Okay.
Is that gonna be a difference too? Because I have one in each hand and it can't really tell. I'm sure it's probably like a gram or two or something like that.
Well, those were the big news things that happened this week. Frank says in the Q&A here that somebody got Windows 95 running on their iPhone 6 this week. So that's a big deal, too.
did that kill the fingerprint reader? Like 8.0.1 did?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it did. It's pretty fun, though, to see stuff like that. What else, though? Anything else you guys... big news? Anything fun that happened this week you want to talk about? Anything I missed that's been known to happen? Ooh, what do you got? What's that?
So we had the YouTube thing. Oh, never mind.
Oh, yeah, the YouTube thing. Was it Music Key?
YouTube Music Key, yes. Yep, that was announced today. That rolls out Monday. It's the beta rolls out Monday. It's a $10 a month music service for unlimited song and album streaming with no ads on YouTube.
And you need an invite to pay them $10 a month.
Yeah, so they got tips from OnePlus for that one.
Yeah.
I don't know what... I'm curious to check it out because I don't know what would compel me to use that instead of All Access.
Yeah.
But I'm curious. Obviously, it's a different service. You get... I don't know. We'll see. Check it out on Monday. But that's official. We've been hearing rumors of that since... It's been like a year. Yeah.
Because we thought it was going to come at I.O. this year, but it didn't.
Yep. And then what phone were you holding up there, Alex?
It's the Desire I that they announced in New York like last month, or the beginning of last month. 13-megapixel front-facing camera. It actually has dual flash on the front. You can't really see it, though, in the camera here. But it's got dual flash on the front as well as the back. Camera's not that impressive to me.
But you can see your own face at 13 megapixels instead of 2. That's impressive, right?
But it doesn't look any better than 2.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
I actually think the M8 camera might have been better, but I got good pictures out of it, so I don't know, a lot of other people didn't. I do like the build. It's polycarbonate, which it looks like it would be like glossy plastic, but it's not. It's just polycarbonate. And then you got the red stripe. They also have like a blue stripe version that they had at the event. I think AT&T only has the red one, though. That's the only one they have on their site right now. But it's basically the same specs as the M8, aside from the camera. Oh, it's a slightly larger display. It's 5.2 megapixels, and it's the same height as the Nexus 6.
5.2 inches?
Mm-hmm. And it's the same height as a 6-inch phone.
Well, because they had to build a giant camera sensor in the front and the back.
You also got the front-facing speakers. They're really small, but they're, like, right there.
But they are front-facing, yep.
They still sound really great. I was using it earlier today. The standby on this thing is, like, amazing. I was streaming Google Play Music for, like, 3-4 hours earlier, and been using it most of the day, and it's about 11 hours off the charger, and it's 75% now, so.
Holy smokes.
What? Yeah.
That's great.
Standby is it's crazy. On it was like that on the One Remix from Verizon. Standby is just crazy on these newer HTC phones.
Good job, HTC.
I still would like a bigger battery just to make everybody buy it, because when they see a 2400 milliamp battery and a 5.2-inch display, they just don't want to buy it, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm really kind of bummed that it's got a 13-megapixel camera on the back and it's not getting as good of pictures, you know, as good of shots as...
I got some good pictures today, but when I first got it, I didn't get that much. I haven't used it a whole lot because I've been working on the Nexus 6 review, so I've just really started using it today. But it doesn't have, like, all the features the M8 had, you know, in the gallery, like all the different editing stuff. But some of the pictures I got today outside were pretty good. I have to see how it does in low light.
Do you see a difference between the front and the rear-facing cameras as far as quality?
Yeah. But I've only used, like, the front-facing one, like, in basically this environment I'm in right now with the light and everything.
Okay.
So it's still kind of hard to tell, but...
It's the same sensor, and I would assume the same software, but maybe they did something different because it's a selfie camera.
They probably did.
Well, curious about that. We'll talk more about that next week then once you've had a chance to play with it for a little while. Cool. So, well, that's a good segue then. You've got the HTC Desire I. What else is new in your Android world, Alex?
I actually think that's it.
Just the Desire I this week?
I don't think I have any other new apps. Oh, yes, I do. Material Walls. It's a material wallpaper app.
Oh, nice.
Everybody's been asking the wallpapers I've got on the Nexus 6 on all the pictures on our site and in the review. That's where I got them all from. So I think I'm pretty sure it's free, but there's a ton in here, and this is actually the outdated version. There's a new version waiting for me to update on the Play Store that's fully material, and it's got a whole lot more wallpapers in there. So that's all I've got.
And we didn't even talk about, man, that everything is getting updated with Material Design. All of Google's apps, all of everybody else's apps.
Their launcher just updated like a few minutes ago.
Did it? Yeah. That'll keep happening again for, you know, a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
What about you, Nick? Anything new this week?
I think about the only thing is the Micromax A1 that I should be hopefully finishing the review up on pretty soon. But that's the second Android One phone that I've got. It was funny because when I took it out of the box and I compared it to the other one, they pretty much look exactly like the same phone. I think about the only difference I could find is the corners are slightly more rounded on this one, and then the actual camera module on the back looks completely different. They just made a totally different design. But other than that, I mean, functionally, everything else, pretty much same thing. So I'm having a hard time finding ways to differentiate this from the other one just in terms of why you would buy this over the other one.
Well, that's not surprising. All things considered, with Android One, you know, especially with these like entry level manufacturers on their hardware, they're not going to differentiate a whole lot.
Yeah.
Because the phone's $100, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a pretty quiet week for me too. No new hardware. I still haven't finished that Asus Iconia 8 tablet review, but it's still a fun tablet. Acer, I'm sorry, not Asus. Sorry. 4 letters, it starts with an A. They're never going to send me anything to review ever again. Sorry, Acer. Whoops. I'm looking to see if there's any other apps. There was a... Android Wear, a watch face app, Nick, that you put in our chat the other day. Rich watch face.
Oh yeah, I forgot about those.
It's a pretty cool looking. It's got round or rectangle, depending on whichever kind of watch you have. But it's a slick looking theme. Variations on that theme. Oops, see if I can get this without glaring off my light up here.
Yeah, you can see it. It looks good.
So, yeah, it's just different colors. There's a black, there's a navy, there's a white. And then some of them you pay for. So there's like a light green one. There's a dark green one. They're 99 cents, or I think it's like $3.83. Yeah, it says it right there. $3.83 to buy all the six of the other ones.
To buy all of them, exactly.
So, lots of cool watch faces and watch face apps out there, but that was a nice one that we found this week.
That I got, now that you remind me of that, is called Minimal and Elegant. And I like this one a lot, too, because it has a color scheduler. So if you like your watch face to change colors throughout the day, I don't know, be dark at night, be lighter during the day or whatever, you can actually set, at 7 a.m. turn green, at 12 p.m. turn blue, I don't know, whatever you want to do. But I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that one was $1.
That is cool. I'll have to check that out, too. Frankie's asking, what's with the new Messenger from Google in the Play Store? So, Frankie, I'm assuming you're asking about the new messaging app, the updated messaging app in the Play Store. That's just the stock Google messaging app. Yeah, so Hangouts is the proprietary app. The one in the Play Store now is the stock messaging app, just updated with Material Design. And they pushed it to the Play Store because it's easier to update from there. And that's all that is. It's not another messaging service from Google. It's not anything confusing. It's just the stock app.
Yeah, I don't think it's part of, the Google App Suite. When you flash, CyanogenMod, you got to flash the GApps package, too. I don't think it's part of that, is it?
No, as far as I know, it's still,
it's still
the open source messaging app.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't quite sure.
I'll have to look into that a little bit more, but I'm pretty sure it's still the AOSP app.
It looks really good, but, I use Google Voice, so I don't really use it. Only messages in there are from T-Mobile.
I'm totally fine with Google pushing all their open source apps to the Play Store. It just makes them easier to update. That's a good thing.
Yeah, HTC and Motorola's been doing that, too.
It's a very pretty app, at the very least. I was tempted to try to text a little more today just to use it. I use too much Hangouts, though.
Yep.
Yeah, all my texts go through Google Voice, so I have to use Hangouts.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm looking to see if there's any other apps, anything new for me this week. I did pick up a Xperia Z2 when those were on sale yesterday. I don't know if they're still on sale. eBay had them for cheap.
I think they're supposed to be on sale for 5 days. I don't know if they're gone. They might be gone by now because they were $399 unlocked.
Mm-hmm. And it's essentially the same phone as the Z3, just the back's not quite as rounded. So I may replace my OnePlus One with it. It's just a hair smaller, and the OnePlus One is a little bit big to use one-handed. So we'll see. I got the notification that shipped today. It's supposed to be here, I think, next Monday. So I got 3 or 4 days to wait on it, 5 days to wait on it.
Yeah, you'll probably like it because it's pretty much the Z3V that Verizon put out, but without all the Verizon stuff on there. And I really like that phone, especially the camera.
Yeah, the camera's great. Sony's already working on a Lollipop update, so I won't have to wait long for that.
Yeah, especially with all the the camera apps that they have in there, the background defocus and all that other stuff. It just makes it so much better.
And the camera on the OnePlus One is great. The camera software is a little bit lacking, so I'm interested to. I like my Sony RX100, so I'm curious to kind of get my hands on a Sony smartphone and see what the software has to offer there.
Yeah, I never got a chance to play with the Z2 because it never really came to the U.S. Tom reviewed it. He actually bought one a few weeks ago, too.
Did he?
I think it was the same price over in the U.K. at that time.
Well, I know a guy here in Richmond who had a Z2, bought a OnePlus One, ended up selling the OnePlus One. And he just, I think 2 weeks ago, bought a Z3. swears
Sony by UI. The Sony UI is really nice. The Z3, I'm not sure about like the curved edges. I didn't play with it that long. I pretty much got back from the Verizon event in New York a couple weeks ago. I pretty much just sent it straight to Justin because I just had too much stuff to review.
Yep.
So I only played with it for like a day, if that.
Yeah, Sony's camera app in particular I thought was interesting because the viewfinder and everything that I've tried in it is 60 frames a second or at least darn smooth, unlike most viewfinders on Android, which at times seem to run at like 2 frames a second, especially if you're in low light.
What I like about their camera app is like there's a lot of stuff in there, but it's not like all right in your face. So if you just want to, you know, take a quick picture, you don't have to go through and change the modes or, you know, it's not confusing. Like Samsung on the S4 or the S5, I think, was a little bit better. I haven't really used it on the Note 3 or Note 4, I mean.
Well, cool. Then that's, I think that's going to do it for the Android Headline Show this week. You can find us, obviously, at androidheadlines.com, on Google+, Twitter, at Android Headline without the S, Facebook too, we're over there, wherever you like to get your Android news. JBQ, again, man, thanks so much for coming on, hanging out, and talking to us. We really, really appreciate it, man. It was a fantastic opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. That was great. Thank you.
Nick, Alex, always a blast, guys. Have a great night.
Later.